Hi, this is Sarah Goodman, Courtney Summers' editor and editorial director of Wednesday Books. This week, we're excited to share a special bonus episode with you all, an interview with Courtney Summers. A few weeks ago, she stopped by our studio and had a chat with myself and Melissa Albert, author of The Hazelwood. In this discussion, Courtney talked about her writing process and where the idea for Sadie came from. Up first, Melissa will be asking the questions. I'll be back in a bit.
So, Courtney, your books feature complex portrayals of fierce, complicated women, and I love them for that.
Why
is it so important for teens' bookshelves to be filled with that kind of girl?
I think it's important to portray female characters in all their raw complexity, because as soon as you do that, you're showing female readers that they don't always have to be likable or the best idea of a girl to be loved and seen and heard.
And what do you feel about that term, unlikable female character? The term that seems to never go away and never seems to be applied to male characters.
That's true. I mean, to me, unlikable is just like a code word for human. I mean, I'll take it. If that's what it means to be unlikable, I'll gladly have my characters described that way. But I don't know, really. It follows me around my career. I've kind of embraced it. You have to. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't upset me or anything like that. It's actually kind of something that I'm proud of, because I'm not here to worry about if readers like my characters.
What kind of girl were you? What kind of teenage girl were you?
I was very, very good.
Oh, interesting.
Yes, I was afraid to do anything. Like, I didn't break any rules. I did drop out of high school.
That's a big rule to break.
Yeah, but okay. I had my parents' permission.
Uh-huh.
So
why? What was the story behind that?
I just didn't like school.
And your parents kind of trusted you and knew you, that you knew yourself?
Yeah, they were like, okay. I was very lucky that way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's like, no more school. And they were like, okay. That's very simplified.
What was your next step?
I decided I was going to figure out what I was going to do with the rest of my life. I was a very weird teenager.
What was your path to becoming a writer then? Were you already a writer at that
point?
No,
I wasn't. I knew that, like, I think I reached a point where I knew I wanted to tell stories, but I didn't know how I wanted to tell them. So when I dropped out of high school, I was like, I'm going to be a famous actress, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
Like, of course.
That's what happens, right.
And I was like, okay, maybe not. Maybe I'll just be a screenwriter, which was equally practical.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, yeah, maybe I'll just be a cinematographer, a photographer.
No small dreams for
Courtney
Summers.
Yeah, it was always like that. And then I was like, okay, well, I've always written throughout all of this, so I'm going to try a novel and see how that works.
And you were still a teenager at that time?
Yeah, I think I was like 18 when I wrote my first novel. Cracked Up to Be was the fourth one I wrote.
Mm-hmm.
So it was done in my like 20s.
Okay.
Time all blurs together now. I'm old.
Were your themes kind of cemented from the start? Like, we were always interested in the same kind of themes?
Yeah, I think they've all been about girls who are a bit challenging and mm-hmm. unpleasant, but with good reason. I put mm-hmm. them through a lot.
Agreed.
Yeah.
So you yourself were a good girl, but you had this kind of fascination with bad behavior. Would you say?
I guess kind of. Like, I mean, you're always interested in the life you're not living, right?
Mm-hmm.
Who isn't? So I guess it was something like that.
And one of your books that stands out as being quite different from the rest is This Is Not a Test,
right?
Your zombie book. Can you talk about how that came to be?
I love zombies. Like, at that point, because I was blogging then, I was always talking about zombies. So, like, anyone who was following me online, it was a sort of natural progression. But if you weren't, it probably would have been a little bit of a surprise. But at the same time, it's like, it's very much a Courtney Summers novel, because it's about a girl who is struggling through depression through the zombie apocalypse and how that kind of shapes her perspective. So the themes are there. There's just like the undead brain-eating things, you know, to help.
That thing.
Yeah, they help, you know, enhance the theme.
Do you have any other kind of genre novels in you that you're dying to write?
I'd one day like to return to certain elements of genre. Like, I like bringing in, like, the zombies as part of, a punctuation on a theme, kind of. So if I could find something like that again, I'd do it.
So tell me a little bit. You said that what became your debut novel was your fourth novel.
Right.
What about the first three that you wrote? What kind of stories were they, if you can talk about that a bit?
The first two were, like, I guess you kind of would categorize them back then as new adult. Like, they were lost 20-somethings that sounded like teenagers. But they weren't teenagers, but they might as well have been. And then the third one was a young adult novel. And then I was like, okay, that's it. That makes more sense to me. So then after it failed to go anywhere, thank God, because it was very bad, I wrote Cracked Up to Be, and it worked out.
So the third book that you wrote was when you kind of started getting
right
into YA. What were the YA books you were reading while you were kind of becoming a YA writer?
I was obsessed with Laurie Hall Sanderson's Speak. I loved The Chocolate War by Robert Cormier. Is that how you say his last name?
I think so.
I've heard other people say Cormier. I loved all his books. I loved Christopher Pike.
Oh, my God. So you were like, I think it's like Beatles, Stones. It's like R.L. Stine, Christopher Pike, I feel. So you were like a Christopher Pike girl?
Yeah, okay. I felt like Goosebumps was like in direct competition. I don't know why, because they're not.
But I thought Fear Street isn't like direct competition.
Right, but I thought they were in competition. I thought Goosebumps was in competition with the Babysitter's Club. So I really, I polled my entire class on the Babysitter's Club versus Goosebumps, and Goosebumps won. I was so mad.
I was so mad. Card-carrying, literal Babysitter's Club.
What? So was I. Did you get the camera?
No.
I got the camera. I got the fan club camera.
I got a little mirror that said Babysitter's Club on it, and I had a card that I put in my little plastic wallet.
Each of the fan club came with a card. Who was your favorite babysitter?
Oh, I think it was Dawn.
Dawn.
Yeah. In retrospect, she's kind of boring.
Well, she's
been
crunchy California, and she's like...
Yeah, and she was like into crunchy granola
food. She wanted to save the planet.
Yeah, the idea of granola was exciting to me as like a kid in the Midwest. I didn't know what it was, but it sounded good.
And she was Marianne's other best friend.
Yeah. Who was yours?
Stacy. I thought she was so New York cool, and she had all the boys.
Yeah. Did she have boys? I don't remember. Did she ever...
Yeah, there was Stacy. That was the whole book.
Right. Yeah, and she had Sam. Didn't she date Sam?
She did. I think she did briefly date Sam.
Yeah, and one of the super specials.
Yeah, she was upset about it. Yeah, and then he got like really possessive or something like that.
Oh my
God! Not shockingly, because it was a Babysitter's Club. But
right.
Sam had some issues.
It wasn't
Sam
Fatal Attraction Babysitter's Club super special.
That would have been great. I would have read that.
That would have been ideal. I would have definitely read that. What else did you read as a kid?
Oh God! Like as a little kid?
Yeah, like in your Babysitter's Club days.
I existed only for the Babysitter's Club. I'm not kidding. I had like 100 books, over 100 books.
I know,
joined the
too.
Fan club multiple times. I called Kmart every day until the movie came out. I'm not kidding. Like, I was really into it. I wrote the guide before they made the guide.
So
I wrote my own guide to the Babysitter's Club.
You fanfic Babysitter's Club.
It's just like a character profile of each one. It's like, this is who everyone is and what they do. And then they had the actual guide come out.
And they sued you for intellectual property.
I think that David Levithan did it.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Have you talked to him about it?
No.
Oh, I think that you need to.
Yeah.
Were you a diary keeper when you were a kid?
For a while. And then I gave it up. Like, my first diary I wrote when I was 5 years old. And there's two entries in it. And one is, Will You Marry Me, Mark Paul Gosselaar. And the other is, Ghostwriter, Are You Out There?
Ghostwriter.
Yeah. Did you never see Ghostwriter?
Oh, writer. There's a Ghostwriter.
Right. Yeah, Ghostwriter.
No, I don't know what that is.
It was like a PBS show, and it was about a ghost who used words from books to communicate like with these teen sleuths.
Oh,
that
sounds awesome.
So he'd write words in the air. So I wrote I wrote Ghostwriter, Are You Out There? And he never answered.
Oh my God. This is amazing. This is all solid gold. Okay. I need to know more about you as a kid now.
Oh God. Does anyone?
What did you want to be when you grew up, when you were a kid?
I said I wanted to be a geologist on Mondays and a singer on Sundays.
So you wanted to work a 2-day week?
Yeah, that was
and have
it.
A 5-day weekend?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. That sounds good.
That sounds about right for me. Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Literally only those days.
Uh-huh. So who were the precursors to characters like Sadie, like this fictional females that you met as a reader that needed to exist for you to get to a girl like Sadie?
Jeez, that's a good question. I'm not sure. You know, I was always drawn, like, anyone, like in TV or movies or anything like that.
Yeah.
I don't know. I was like, I think Dawson's Creek must have been a turning point for me because I started out hating Jen.
Mm,
and then you get...
Me too.
And yeah, Joey hated Jen and it's like, poor Joey. And then you get to season two and it's like, wow, I hate Joey. And it's just, I completely flipped. And then I was like, I was like a Jen Lindley fangirl for ages. And she was inherently misunderstood, wasn't she?
Yeah.
Like, she went back to Dawson. Like, what did they did terrible things to her character?
Let's talk a little bit about your writing process.
Okay.
What does a day of writing look like for you?
It's a night of writing.
Oh, okay.
Late into the night, staring at my computer, and then typing a word every now and then.
Okay.
That's literally it, though. There's nothing special about it.
Are you a daily writer?
I try to be. When I'm in the middle of a book, mostly between then and writing, you know, the idea stage, I'm doing nothing.
So do you read when you're working on a project, or do you try to like
it's
keep
hard.
Your brain
clean? I can read, but it's hard. I don't read nearly as often as I should. It's different when you write, you know, when you're looking at things from like a craft perspective all the time. It's just hard to fall into a novel the way you used to.
Oh, do you find that you like read differently than you used
to? Yeah. So like every so often a book has to come along and really like win me, which The Hazelwood did, just
so you know.
But it's rare. Which sounds like a mean... It's because I can't stop thinking, technically. It's not a commentary on the book. It's
of
just
course.
Like, I'm thinking too hard.
Mm-hmm. No, I understand. Yeah. I became a copy editor for a while. And
oh, God, that
I
would be hard.
I couldn't read restaurant menus anymore.
Oh, my God.
I wanted to copy edit them. What does your workspace look like?
It's just a desk away from the window.
Okay.
That's a nice thing. It's
otherwise,
like, I don't want to see the world. I don't want the sun to hit me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a writer.
So you're like a little bit vampiric in your writing habits.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know. Space really isn't important to me like that. I know some readers have really, you know, they've got it all laid out perfectly. I have Bob Ross like staring at me.
wait. I'm good. What?
A little Funko Pop Bob
oh, you
Ross.
Do? Okay.
Yeah. So he stares down on my creative process and,
mm-hmm.
you know,
and
as long as he's
it.
There, I don't care about anything else.
With a happy little stream.
There are no mistakes, just happy accidents.
That's nice. I like that.
That's gonna guide my writing process for the rest of my life.
Do you have any like writerly superstitions? It sounds like you don't.
Not really.
Okay.
I'm not gonna tell people about my like ideas on Twitter. Don't say things out loud before I'm ready to.
That's more like, that's just like practical.
Yeah.
Right? That's just like a good idea. Do you have other creative outlets?
I guess I play the piano sometimes.
Okay.
Look at that, kind of.
Yeah.
No.
That's
just writing.
So tell me a little bit about the first idea that became Sadie, because it's just such a fantastic concept. It's it marries a first-person thriller
right.
with a podcast,
gosh.
Two different timelines, a true crime podcast, and it's
right.
two different timelines. And it's wonderful, and
thank
I got
so
totally
much.
Sucked in when I read it, and I would
so happy about that.
Love to hear about the origins of the book.
It was just at some point after All the Rage, my fifth book, and then some point after Serial, I just started writing it. It's so weird. I barely remember how that came to be. It was just like there was a podcast on
mm-hmm.
the page, and then it went from there.
So when you started writing it, what came first was the podcast?
It was the podcast.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Did you know right away that you were going to go into Sadie's voice as well, or did that
yeah,
come later?
Yeah, I was pretty sure I would, because I didn't think a podcast throughout the whole thing wouldn't work for me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so it was just there. It's so weird. I don't remember it now. I don't know why. I remember everything that made something happen with my books, and I'm just like, and then there was Sadie. Out of the thin air.
And her voice, did that come to you kind of in a piece?
It came. I think it's...
It's hard to talk about the mysteries of creation.
It is.
It
just happened. But, like, you know, writing about angry girls isn't... That's what I do.
Mm-hmm.
So her voice was just there.
Where is... from what source is, like, the well of anger that you draw on yourself? I mean, there's so much to be angry about. Like,
yeah.
Is it... something that feels present for you all the time, or is it something you access when you work?
Yes, I'm just a little pressure cooker of uncontrolled rage.
Yeah.
Yeah. I get easily aggravated about a lot of things. I mean, that's why I write about, like, similar topics all the time, because it's something that's making me angry. So I'm going to work that out in writing, I guess, over and over and over until I'm not angry anymore. That'll be my last book.
Your
you know, Courtney's
book.
Finally happy by Courtney Summers. No.
Boy,
I'm not
crazy
unhappy.
Courtney. Yeah.
Yeah.
So when you began writing Sadie, did you have a feeling for where it was going? Like, did you know the ending?
I didn't know the ending until we, like, got there.
Okay. Is that
yeah,
how you
like,
usually work?
Sarah, my editor, was helping me develop it the whole time, basically. So we would check in, like, every 50 or 100 pages. So the mystery was kind of like we were working it out together. I think for a while there, I kept, this isn't a spoiler, I was going to keep the killer a secret, but it's revealed fairly early on. That took a while to untangle, and as soon as it did, it was just like figuring out the propulsion of that. But as soon as I knew that wasn't going to be a secret anymore, it was just like, it just kind of unfolded through a lot of editorial rounds.
It's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Hi again, it's Sarah. Thanks so much to Melissa Albert for stopping by. Hear the rest of her interview with Courtney on the Barnes & Noble YA podcast. Now I talk a little bit more with Courtney about what it was like to write Sadie. I wanted to talk a little bit about the role that violence plays in your books in general. I think on one hand, obviously, and something that I've said about Sadie, that violence in Sadie really only occurs, well, obviously it occurs in the past tense to the main characters, but right. I think in terms of the violence that Sadie inflicts upon other people, it only is inflicted upon the truly bad, the people right. who deserve it,
yeah.
which I think is important for her mission and important for right. readers to know about her. But I think actually on a lighter note about violence, and it's something that I think you actually have in all of your books, is violence.
Oh, yes, I do.
I wanted to talk a little bit about just like a very simply about the influences of writing violence into your books. I think you've mentioned a lot over the years, I think in social media, how you're a video game player.
Yes.
That horror movies influence you. Do you think about when you're any, you know, sort of specific scenes from horror movies, or do video games influence the way that you write the violence into your stories?
I don't think so. I don't think the violence in my book is particularly inspired by or influenced by any outside sources. I think they're what, you know, the acts of violence in my books are what is necessitated by the books. You know, I would never write something just because I thought it was cool, or I was, well, at least I would. Wait, I would never write anything because I thought it was cool. I don't write things I like.
I'm thinking specifically if this is not a test, maybe.
Or oh God, scenes, yeah, you're right. That's fair.
Or scenes where I feel like it's very, and I'm thinking actually just about the logistics of writing a violent scene, of just about the actual
okay.
placement of the characters in your head, even just about the actions on the page that you write in such vivid detail.
Right.
And I don't think you're ever gratuitous, actually. I think
Thank you.
It always makes a lot of sense for the story that's happening.
Good.
But I think you do it well. It's very visceral.
Thank you.
And so I wondered if your other sort of consumption of media influenced the way that you write those scenes.
I mean, I don't want to say that I think, oh, I think violence is cool. You know, I want to write lots of people getting bloody.
It's not even about that. I think it's actually just the
like
actual
the
painting of the scene.
Like,
the painting of the scene. I think so much, there are so many scenes in your books that still stand out to me.
Okay.
And sometimes
okay,
I can't, and when I'm thinking back about even, I'm never sure of like what made it into the books and what were just edited scenes even.
Right.
But I have such visuals of just, or even in Some Girls Are, you know, there's
right.
these scenes where she's getting beaten up. I just think, and again, it's never gratuitous, but it's visceral. And I
right.
just,
oh,
I wondered where
okay.
you pull that sort of inspiration from. And inspiration's a
okay.
weird word to use here, I know. But I think that you paint the scene so beautifully. Again, another weird word to use when describing violence, but you do.
Well, one thing I'm really conscious of when I'm writing violent scenes is the senses. I don't think that I have intensely choreographed violent kind of action scenes in my books. I think I'm leaning really on the feeling, the emotion, the physical pain, how that feels, sort of just relying on sense, how it would feel to be hit, how shocking it is. I think I lean into that mostly. So it's I don't even think it's that visual in my books. I think it's more about a sort of explosion of feeling
yeah.
whenever I incorporate violence into a novel.
Yeah, I
yeah.
think you're right.
Yeah.
The pain. You feel
yeah.
the pain.
Yeah, it's not like, I feel like in one book, it was sort of the shock of being able to be violent. I think that's a consistent thread throughout my books, is characters engaging in acts of violence, being surprised by themselves when they do it. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
and trying to paint that sort of shocked unexpectedness of it, even though at this point I guess readers could count on it.
Mm-hmm.
Someone is going to get violent in a Courtney Summers novel.
And quite often your characters are sort of recovering from a violent episode and sort of moving
yeah.
on. Like Sadie,
I definitely have
this
a
hurts
theme.
Now, but it's going to hurt way worse 3 days
yeah.
later. Or
yeah.
how, you know, you can feel the like after effects of the
yeah,
pain.
Yeah, because you can't just move on from being physically, you know, like, I'll watch a television show and someone will get concussed and then they'll be driving a car 5 minutes later. That doesn't seem right, does it?
No.
Yeah, just, right. yeah, like it, I want to deep dive into that if I'm going to put it on the page, because then otherwise it doesn't seem to have a purpose, does it?
On another theme, something that I find so inspiring when reading the podcast elements of this book and also the dialogue within the Sadie scenes as well. But I think particularly in the podcast elements, how seamlessly you go back and forth between live podcast moments when they're talking directly with Maybeth, with Wes right. talking directly with Maybeth, and then into the studio as well. And I know you've said you listen to a lot of podcasts too, but I always thought that there's a bit of a musicality to your writing.
Thank you.
To your dialogue, but also with the beats of the podcast, the way you laid it out. And I wondered if you mentioned that you play piano.
Right.
If your musical sense comes into play when you're writing dialogue.
I never
dialogue.
Said I played piano well, though.
But you understand music. You
a
understand,
little bit, yeah.
I think, rhythm. There's a rhythm to this, to the way that the podcast is laid out.
I read it out loud a lot, so you can get a real sense of the rhythm and the beats of the episode. If it didn't sound right coming out of my mouth, it wasn't going to read like an effective podcast, because you have to be able to hear it. If you can't hear it, then it's not going to work on the page. I think it's more like, because at one point in being a teenager, when I was a teenager, I wanted to be a screenwriter for a very brief period. And I used to read scripts. I used to like go out and buy them, like, you know, Scream and all the Kevin Smith scripts. I used to buy them and I'd study them. I'd write my own scripts. So I felt like falling back into that again. Mm-hmm. I think that kind of stuck with me. So it's something between the audio element, like talking it out loud, and then having that whole obsessive stage in my youth. I think it all came into play, and maybe the piano too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's just, I'm impressed how you were able to, you know, Wes will be talking to Carl Earl or whomever.
Right.
And then you kind of get this sense like, okay, he's done with him. And then you jump to another character, and it just always made sense. It always was like, that's exactly what the reader wants. That's exactly the next step, the next beat that the reader is expecting without even knowing it.
Well, you helped with that too.
But still.
Because you always told me when it wasn't working. You know?
Again, the weed whacker.
Yes.
Yeah. But I do sense a musicality, a rhythm to your writing that maybe you didn't know was there, but I feel it whenever I read it. And I think as an editor, whenever that rhythm goes off, it's very apparent to me.
Yes.
I think probably when you're writing it, you lose track of it. But for somebody who's not in your head,
no,
and like picking up on the rhythm
in
your writing. Yeah.
Yeah. I can count on that.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right. But from somebody who also really loves music, I've always thought that your writing had a definite like rhythm to it.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I've read it out loud a lot. Like, that's what I do. I like to read it out loud. I think that might be the bigger component than like me knowing it, because I don't want to overcredit myself as a musical person. I can be very bad at music. So I'm just going to say it's because I read it out loud.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I've heard is actually the key to most sort of wrapping up the final edits of a book is to read it out loud, right?
Yeah, you have to be able to hear it, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, not everyone does it, but I couldn't imagine not doing it at this point. It's worked for me so far.
Thanks again for listening to The Girls. You can now go find Sadie by picking up a copy of the book, audiobook, or ebook at any bookstore or retailer. Click the link in the show notes for more information.